You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Tuesday morning, May 6th, 2025. Corrine Hendrickson standing by to talk to us about a day without child care. Things are going to be different for a lot of child care providers and parents next week. We'll explain what is happening. We'll be joined later this hour by Sheila Everhart of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association and our friend and dairy farmer Hans Brighton Moser, all part of National Tourism Week across the country and appreciating agricultural tourism here in Wisconsin. Still ahead in our 8 o'clock hour, we will be talking to Chad Holmes to find out the stories that he's following in the Wausau area, and Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area and Civic Media political editor will be joining us as well. A very busy week in the legislature, not necessarily productive, but busy. You know, we'll find out the difference in just a bit. But first, we turn to award-winning meteorologist Brittany Merlot for a forecast today that is just as bright and beautiful as her outfit today, which is this very springtime pinkish, much like the sunrises this morning. That's just a wonderful time of year. How are you, Brittany?
It really is. This is the best. You get the crisp, beautiful mornings, but the nice warm afternoons. You guys are in short sleeves already. I love this.
That's right.
Got to rock it today. It's going to be nice.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So right now this morning, a little crisp and cool. Superior, you're sitting at 32 degrees this morning. So right at that freezing mark. But a lot of the state is in the mid 40s and 54 degrees down southeast into West Bend. So a sunny, calm morning. There were some areas of patchy fog, but that is burning off right now. And of course, we're just going to stay bright and beautiful all day long. No complaints there. Yes. High temperatures, right? We're going to make it all the way, the entire state, into the mid to upper 70s. I do think some places far northwest will still hit 80 degrees today. It is just going to feel great, look great. But of course, if you have allergies, that pollen count is pretty high today. That's the only downside. Also, there's also a high fire danger, especially far northwest and also into central and northeastern Wisconsin. So just be careful out there of any sparks. Don't burn anything. And then tomorrow, we've got a cold front that moves through. So enjoy today. Seize the moment. Seriously.
It's short and sweet. When the forecasts are this short, it's because they're that good.
Yeah.
Just that glorious. Good morning, says Rob from Tigerton. It's sunny and 48 degrees. I made it through my colonoscopy yesterday. They found 4 polyps with hoping no cancer. That's why anyone over 45 should get one. Today, I've got mowing jobs in the Wittenberg area. It's fun being on the lawn tractor, enjoying the nice weather. We mentioned Bob Seger turns 80 years old today. His favorite Bob Seger song is still the same. Wanted to thank his nephew, Adam, for being his driver to and from Shawano. Had a spaghetti and meatball dinner at the Shawano Cafe on Highway 22, right off 29 there in Shawano. And yes, Brittany won the awards, but Rob says all three of you are award-winning people.
Thank you, Rob.
100%. Tony mentions that a huge fire shut down US 2 up there by Ashland yesterday. So right on about the fire danger.
What the heck? That's terrible.
Yeah, he says both east and west of Ashland. And Tony also writes on YouTube, Greg, your question, how big is the Hodag Dome? Big enough to fit a Hodag.
Mm-hmm.
That's science.
Where is it?
There it is.
Greg, have you seen the Hodag? Have you seen him up in Rhinelander?
Are you talking about the mythical creature?
Yes.
Statue.
No, some would say mythical.
I don't know if where is it? It's located where?
Rhinelander.
No, I don't think so. There's a good portion of this state that I still have yet to explore, but someday. someday.
It's worth a stop. It's worth a stop and a picture, for sure.
That's right. And Rob notes some grass fires in Shawnee County as well. So again, can't emphasize enough, please be careful out there. This is not the time to be burning anything. The brush pile can wait, without a doubt. All right. Thanks, Brittany. We'll talk to you in an hour.
Sounds good.
Let's get an update now on what's going to be happening with an annual event that is designed to highlight a very large growing problem. It's been building for some time. This isn't some kind of a mystery. The mystery is why there are so few politicians on one side of the aisle that want to take it seriously. So Corrine Hendrickson is here, a child care provider from the New Glarus area, to talk about a day without child care next week. Corrine, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am good, and I'm excited about being outside all day today.
I know. Yes, you get a rare day off as you're getting the planning going for a day without childcare. Let's start with that, the 30,000 foot view. What is it? How did it come to be?
So 4 years ago, the Day Without Childcare began with the Child Care Changemakers Community Change Organization. And it really was because before COVID, there was already an issue already across the country, half of family childcare in the last decade. And so during COVID, it was our opportunity to really help remind people, like, you're begging us to stay open. And without us, you cannot work. It doesn't matter if there's a health issue or not. It doesn't matter what's going on. Childcare is always necessary, needed. And so this is something that my colleague, Brooke Legler, and I have really helped push in our entire state. We have had the most events and across the country in our state the last 4 years running. Right now we're behind by a couple, so we're asking our colleagues who are planning events to put it on the map. So there's a childcarechangemakers.org, and you can go to the map and you can find out what events are close to you to attend, and all of them are open to the public.
So some of these are events designed to highlight the problem, to educate people about the problem, but there will be providers that are either not going to be open that day or making some other accommodations to essentially illustrate how bad things could get, right?
Oh, absolutely. So some of us are closing and having community events. Some of us are staying open and having elected representatives come in and have conversations with their parents and their teachers. Some of us are staying open and having parents, before they can leave their child for the day, write to their elected representatives, especially with the budget season, asking for that $480 million investment. We also have some stickers that parents can wear, and we're asking all parents, whether they have care that they pay for or that they have a family, friend, neighbor, the other parent is home while they work, to make stickers or buttons and wear them, and that says, without childcare, I couldn't be here today. Because we keep hearing from people that, I don't have young kids, this doesn't affect me. Well, if every single person who relies on care is wearing a sticker when people are going around that day, they're going to realize how many people they interact require that care and how it does impact them and why it's important that we as a state finally invest a single dollar into the childcare system instead of relying on federal dollars.
I'm really glad that in the historical overview, you brought it back to the pandemic notion of essential workers. It helped us understand just how vital certain parts of the economy are. Not that every job isn't important, but at its bare roots, even in a pandemic, there are things that still need to operate, but can't operate if people aren't working there, and people aren't working there if there's not childcare centers. And it really, in my mind, shows the difference between what you're asking for from the legislature as an investment in the economy, in the workforce, versus the way other people describe it as some kind of a handout.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah, COVID revealed the issues, the structural issues that were happening, and gave us an opportunity to use that federal funding that all of us on the ground advocated really hard for, and to use that in ways to show that it really, truly is about the wages for the team. If we cannot pay our teachers more than $13 an hour, who's going to work for us? And what quality are you going to have? Because they're going to be stressed and burnt out. Because if you're only making $13 an hour, you're not taking care of yourself or your family appropriately. And you're working multiple jobs. And then you're supposed to be, you know, happy and excited and meet the needs of four infants who are crying because they're hungry or need to be held or rocked or want attention. It's just absurd that we expect people to do this and have continued to expect people to do this, because for some reason, women are just supposed to be kind and caring and giving. And, you know, some of us just deserve to, like, be paid in hugs and love, I guess. So, yeah, that's why we've been doing these community conversations as well. So tonight at Brooks Cider at 6 p.m., we will be having a community conversation about childcare and why it's so important.
And really, apart from, you know, the provider themselves, again, the nice ladies who do it out of the goodness of their heart. I think it's worth mentioning. I mean, there are so many different figures involved in this. There's the provider, but there's also maybe the provider has an employer of a center. So you've got those two right there. Then you've got the parent as a third important building block. But that fourth block, the workplace that depends on having these folks and who suffer when a parent, usually but not always a mom, says we can't find or keep affordable daycare. And so that business loses some very valued employees. And like you said, we knew this was going on before COVID. Just from a demographic standpoint, it's only getting worse and calling out for some kind of an attention.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things where a lot more employers are starting to take notice again. I've had employers calling me, you know, asking if I have space. And I always am like, no, and your person called me as well. But they're having difficulties finding care, and they're trying finding care for their employees so that their employee can get to work. And so they're trying to do things. So that's, you know, valuable time that the HR is spending doing, you know, something that's not really part of the business, but an absolute integral part of the business. Because if you don't have people that can come, then you don't have employees. And another thing is, we keep hearing from people that, you know, people just don't want to work. Well, we keep pushing back on that. And we're like, no, people want to work. They can't get there. Why can't they get there? They don't have affordable housing. They don't have reliable transportation. They don't have care for their child. And really getting those conversations to be more curious and deeper, and having a conversation instead of judging and assuming that people just don't want to work because they're lazy.
Yeah, we've got Tony posts on YouTube out of the Ashland area. Washburn School has a daycare. It has an 18-month wait list. And I recall that happening with my one daughter who, again, having their first child and finding out, you know, there's this 18-month wait list when it's like they just found out they're pregnant. And, you know, that's how serious things have become to this point, and why we need the legislature to be paying attention to an issue like this. We're talking to Corrine Hendrickson from New Glarus about a day without child care and the events that are going to be going on as a result of it. Corrine, is there one particular website where people should go to if they want to learn more about the day and the issue?
Yeah, the Community Change Day Without Child Care. There's a map website, and I can mail it to you so you can put it in your
Yep. Oh, you know what? I see it right here. CommunityChangeAction.org. Again, CommunityChangeAction.org. And on there, you'll see a day without child care. And like you said, there's a map and much more about the issue that we're talking about with Corrine Hendrickson. Here's a little sports at 7:18. The Milwaukee Brewers got back in the win column again, got back to 500 on the season, defeating the Houston Astros on Monday night, 5-1. Christian Yelich hit a 2-run home run. Tobias Myers pitched 5 1/3 strong innings. Yelich's homer came in his 1,500th career game. It also broke an 0-for-19 slump, so that was some good news. Nothing like the one that Vinny Capra was suffering from. The Brewer third baseman was in an 0-for-36 slump until he got a single last night in the eighth inning. It was his first hit since April 2nd. They will be hosting the Houston Astros again tonight and then again tomorrow afternoon. Coverage of this evening's game starts at 6:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, in Oshkosh, in Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and the newest Brewers affiliate, WBZH, in Hayward. Yet to come today, we will be talking in just over an hour to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area about what the legislature is up to this week, including some retreads, bills that have been vetoed by Governor Evers, sometimes repeatedly. And yet, that's what they're doing again in Madison this week, instead of things like solving the childcare crisis. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend a part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlum.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
From the text line from Lori in Hayward, maybe Donnie Two Dolls doesn't need a $45 million birthday military parade. Yeah, we haven't even really gotten into that yet, in part because there's so many times that President Trump says something and then nothing comes of it. Or he says, I want to do this, and sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, and there are many real things that affect you right now. And if we get to the point where this guy's actually serious about a multi-million dollar parade, as he's telling kids they don't really need toys for Christmas, we'll get into it then. But let's deal with what we've got in the here and now. And that includes reminding you that Dan Schaefer, who was on in the last hour, you can catch his work at the Recombobulation Area. And I didn't share that address earlier when he was with us. It's at therecombobulationarea.news. Therecombobulationarea.news. And of course, all across the Civic Media website, where he is the Civic Media political editor. Let's visit now with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underlie, as we head through Teacher Appreciation Week and start to bring the school year in for a landing. Dr. Underlie, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, well, we appreciated the chance to get to check in with you before the school year wrapped up entirely and while the state budget was going on and while whatever this is was happening in Washington, D.C. Let's start with the good news first. It being Teacher Appreciation Week, you've already provided some official recognition to one educator. There are more to come. So can you tell us about the importance of having a week like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just that teachers leave such a lasting impact on their students, and we can't thank them enough for everything they do every day. And I think everybody has that teacher in their life that they've thought about, you know, here and there, who's made such a deep impact on them as adults. And as you said, you know, there's more to come. We named our first one earlier this week on Monday, and that was Joel Coyne at Sun Prairie East. And Sun Prairie East High School, he's a business and marketing teacher, second career teacher. So teaching was not his first thing out of college. But no, there are more to come, and we try to do one in every level. So elementary, middle, high school, as well as pupil services and then electives.
You know, and it's great that the Department of Public Instruction does that. But I also noticed that, say, local media will do that. They'll have, you know, Golden Apple Awards or Sunshine Awards or Jefferson Awards or all kinds of things where they, too, will salute these local educators. It seems like an awfully nice and well-deserved counterbalance to what we so often heard in political circles about public education in our state and in our country.
Yeah, there is such an imbalance. I think, you know, when you look at the day-to-day of schools, incredible stuff happens in schools every day. It's positive. When you go into schools and you visit schools, I mean, they're celebrating students. They're celebrating the work of their teachers. And it's so positive. But the positive stuff very, very rarely, I feel, makes it into the regular news cycle. The news cycle focuses on what sells. It focuses on the negative. It focuses on, you know, controversy. And unfortunately for our schools, they lose out on that. And that would be something I'd love to change.
Oh, without a doubt. We're talking to Jill Underlie, State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And part of that, of course, stems from, I mean, we're going way back now to the Act 10 days and the years that this legislature has had the current management scheme, shall we say. And as we have talked about in the show, the Republicans running the Joint Finance Committee have already announced the 612 things that Governor Evers has proposed that they're going to strip out of the state budget. Many of these things deal with education. Some you agreed with, some you probably would have liked to have seen, done more or differently. But just from an overall standpoint, looking at the state budget and where we are in the process right now, what's your own evaluation of what the finished product could end up looking like?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're on the same page. I feel like that the Republicans in the legislature also understand that we must invest in our public schools and the future of our kids. And I mean, that's exactly what mine and Governor Evers' budget proposal does. And it's a great opportunity. It's a tremendous opportunity to shape Wisconsin's future. I mean, they could leave their mark on Wisconsin's future by making critical investments in education. I mean, the cards are out there. It, you know, the number of referendums that have been on the ballot, the number of referendums that pass, also the ones that just barely fail. I think you know, the public, you know, at the hearings, you know, has made it very clear that they value investing in public education. And we have been, when you think about the generations of kids since Act 10, I mean, we're at 15 years that these kids, we've graduated an entire cohort of kids that have lived under austerity measures, teachers getting paid less than they would in other states, less than what they were earning really in real dollars in 2010. You look at the cuts to programs that we've had to experience and school districts trying to make that up by passing referendums. I mean, these are opportunities that our kids and our future have really just missed out on. And so the Republicans and the Joint Finance Committee can leave an indelible mark on the future of Wisconsin. And it's an incredible opportunity to do so.
And we should note that sometimes things are pulled out of what the governor proposes, but then some things come back in at either a lower level or some kind of a modified level. So if we look at it from that approach, what kinds of things would you say if people could contact their legislator, especially if it's a Republican one, to say, look, there is still time to make this better by doing X? And I mean, for me, X is always that wide disparity in special education reimbursement, but there's also mental health services. Mm-hmm. What do you think can be done that is actually feasible that Republicans could put back in or modify?
Well, I think, you know, just giving our school districts the flexibility, again, you know, to make their own decisions about revenue, making sure that they have enough revenue, whether it's in special education reimbursement, which would give them spendable revenue, whether it's in raising, you know, the low revenue ceiling to make it to the state average, giving school districts the flexibility by increasing the pupil amount. I mean, the reasons our school districts are going to referendum is because they've been locked in to these revenue limits that were put into place in like 1993. And it's just really, they are just handcuffed. Like they can't make local decisions because they don't have the ability to even raise their own revenue. But then there's the other things like you mentioned, you know, like there's all these cuts coming from the federal government that we're going to have to figure out if those are priorities or not. And our school districts have found that they have been, you know, mental health support has been a lifesaver, literally, for, you know, kids in our schools since COVID. You look at the investment in mental health has helped with our graduation rates. It has reduced truancy. You look at the investment in school nutrition and how that has actually improved academic outcomes. So there's a lot of things and literacy. I mean, there's a lot of things. And it's really just that we don't have the flexibility to implement these without the funding.
And we've got Congressman Mark Bocan standing by, and we're going to talk to him about this as well. But let's conclude on that note of the uncertainty of what Trump says he wants to cut, what you're confident will be cut, the uncertainty about what is out there. I mean, come on, I can't even form a basic question about it we're getting so nothing but curveballs thrown at us from the very highest levels of government.
Yeah, it reminds me of those choose your own adventure books, you know, when we were younger. But yeah, I mean, we're all for being efficient in government, but not when it comes at the expense of our kids. I mean, and it's just really that's what it's coming down to. I mean, we're informed every week, it seems, on some program that's being eliminated. And the most recent one was the mental health professionals in our schools. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know, it's just how cruel, you know, this can be. But I mean, we're seeing results from the, you know, the federal funding before, and for them to cut it, that's really unfortunate. You know, you look at there's pilot programs that we've had, you know, for recruitment of teachers. We've had pilot programs for math instruction, literacy, AmeriCorps. I mean, there's so many things that we've, you know are working, and yet are just being randomly cut.
Well, again, under that guise of, we're returning education to the states, which is, again, a fallacy. The state already had that. It needed the assistance from the federal government, and that is certainly in jeopardy at this point. Dr. Jill Underley, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, thank you so much for telling us about Teacher Appreciation Week and giving us an update on all the governmental matters in Madison and D.C. You've got a lot of plates to keep spinning, and we appreciate you spending some time with us.
I appreciate it, too. Thanks so much, Pat.
You bet. Have a great day. And let's turn to again, the chaos in D.C., where nobody's keeping the plates spinning. I mean, the plates are just falling and crashing everywhere. Congressman Mark Pocan joins us. Congressman, how are you?
I'm good. Sorry, I'm a little late.
Oh, no, you're fine. We had Dr. Underley available, so we've been able to have a very happy twofer today to get both of you on the show this morning. And so let's just start with that. Let's pick up where we left off with Dr. Underley just on the education funding, because, yes, you've been in Congress for a while, but you were in the legislature for quite a while prior to that. And so you can speak as well as anybody to this notion of what the MAGA folks are saying is, well, cutting the U.S. Department of Education doesn't mean anything. We're just returning education control to the states. It's so much more than that.
That's cow manure, okay? Yes. Because I know I'm on the radio. That's how I'm saying it. Here's the bottom line. They're cutting 45% of federal funding. What that means, because they have not identified how they're going to do those cuts yet, could mean cuts to things like Pell Grants, which I received when I went to college. It could be cuts to IDEA or Title I funding. These are some of the bigger pools of funding. Title I is for lower income districts, many in rural parts of Wisconsin. IDEA is for special ed funding. At the end of the day, if you cut one of those two funds locally, you're likely going to have to raise local taxes to pick up for some of the slack, because you're going to have to fire a lot of teachers and you're going to have really big class sizes. So that means we get to pay even more for reduced services so that Elon Musk and Donald Trump get a giant tax cut, because that's now $5.5 trillion estimated by the Joint Committee on Taxation. So, yeah, I mean, Dr. Underley has got her hands very full with what's going to be coming up in the legislature as well. And unfortunately, I don't have a lot of faith in the Republican majority in Congress to get it right.
Well, and faith in whatever they say, because I'm looking at a USA Today article about how it says the Trump administration has reversed course on a proposal to cut all funding for Head Start, and says that there will not be changes to the Head Start funding. I don't know that I can trust that.
No, this happened a number of years ago when they were going to cut, when Trump won, was going to cut Special Olympics funding. And I and others called out the secretary when they came before my committee, and they backpedaled and they didn't. And the good news is we actually were able to add money at the end for it because of how stupid their moves were. And certainly, you know, Head Start is one of those programs that'd be incredibly dumb to try to cut. But they're going to have these cuts supposedly between now and Memorial Day. I think it's going to stretch into between now and July 4th, because they already had to cancel three markups this week, because even their members are saying, oh, you mean when I said I was going to cut $880 billion, I was going to cut Medicaid? Oops. No, they knew it, but they're getting enough pressure from people back home.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what we need to do right now. Is
that's right.
That pressure up.
We'll continue the conversation with Congressman Mark Pocan, but first, from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. Joe Specky in our next hour. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow on the program, we will have Melissa Baldoff, and our state capitol report will include State Senator Sarah Kieski about a bill that would ban Wall Street hedge funds from owning single-family homes in Wisconsin, which drives up prices as they get converted to rentals. Let's continue the conversation now with Congressman Mark Pocan, and let's start with Medicaid this time around, and a tale of two of your colleagues. You have, on the one hand, Congressman Derek Van Orden, again, saying all the usual things like he has told his leadership and he has signed a pledge not to make any cuts to Medicaid. And well, we're going to cut all kinds of waste, fraud, and abuse, but not Medicaid. And then Ron Johnson goes and rips off the Band-Aid and says, I don't know why everybody is so squeamish about this. If we got to get rid of Medicaid, we got to get rid of Medicaid is what he's saying in so many words. And I'm kind of thinking he did us all a favor by saying the quiet part out loud and making it clear that for every Derek Van Orden out there promising not to cut Medicaid, there's a Ron Johnson kind of giving up the game.
Well, the thing is, when you make a promise, you also have to keep it. And I've heard those promises made by that member on SNAP, and he voted to cut SNAP as well. So, you know, what the Republicans in the House did, and then the Senate concurred in a vote, even though they had 2% of the cuts of what the House had, was an $880 billion cut to the Department of to the Energy and Commerce Committee's jurisdiction. Their jurisdiction is Medicaid, Medicare, and everything else, totaling $581 billion. So even if you cut everything else, which no one has ever said they were going to do, you would still have to cut either Medicaid or Medicare by $299 billion by their own votes. So anyone who says that they're not going to cut it already voted to cut it. That's just not true. And, you know, Ron Johnson, often says things out loud that, you know, most people would not say out loud. But it's true that that's what they want to go after. I think they want to make it so that able-bodied men have to work in order to get Medicaid, which saves so, so little money. That's nothing close to what they're proposing. They're going to propose maybe a per capita limits on folks and all sorts of things. And luckily, they're having a fight within their caucus right now. But I noticed, you know, Derek did not sign the letter that some members sent publicly saying they wouldn't vote for Medicaid cuts. So I guess we'll see what happens at the end of the day. But Medicaid, for your listeners, is healthcare and long-term care for 1.3 million people in Wisconsin. One out of three kids gets their healthcare from Medicaid. 55% of seniors in nursing homes gets their support from Medicaid. 45% of adults living independently with disabilities get support from Medicaid. So it's a big thing, and that's why it's important not to cut.
It's a big thing for, it's a lifeline for so many families. And Senator Ron Johnson just speaks so cavalierly of just, you know, cutting it. It's got to be cut. And I guess magically the private insurance folks come in and it's all affordable somehow or another. I'm not quite sure. Or they just go without coverage. I don't know what the Ron Johnson alternative is. Well, I'm not asking you to speak for him either.
Ron Johnson could take his private jet to any doctor in the country.
Yeah.
I think that percent of people in Wisconsin is very, very small.
So you did allude to the other thing I wanted to ask about with Congressman Van Orden and others who have said, oh, we're not going to cut SNAP, traditionally known as food stamps, nutrition assistance. Yeah. And came up with this other scheme where instead of passing like 25% of the cost on to the states, you would only pass on the cost based on the SNAP overpayment rate or the error rate in your state. Which makes me wonder, was that the Republican plan all along, but you start with an extreme position and then, you know, Derek Van Orden looks like a hero by saying, no, let's go to this lower number instead. Or do you end up that they actually do try to, you know, push 20% of SNAP costs onto state government and folks like Derek Van Orden have to say, well, what could I do? I was outvoted.
Yeah, that's a cut. And yeah. If they vote for the package at the end, they voted for a cut. It's so simple. You know, yesterday I had a little conversation with the Treasury Secretary in a committee, and I asked a real simple question: who pays for tariffs? And the answer was the most esoteric Zen Buddhist theory of life answer, other than who pays for tariffs. And in this case, if you vote to cut the funding, yeah, that's a cut. Vote to cut a program, and we can't let them get away with any kind of tap dancing about what the words mean. And, you know, we need to hold people accountable. So, you know, this is really why when Republican members of the House or Senate don't have town halls and aren't accountable to being heard by their constituents, that, you know, they'll listen to the DC special interests and their leadership rather than the people back home. And that's why that's such a big problem.
I've got a note here from somebody at Civic Media who says that they put that clip of you talking about tariffs and trying to get a straight answer. They put it up on the Civic Media Instagram, and that site alone, that video got 300,000 views because people are just they in disbelief that they won't answer a basic question from you.
Well, and I guess it was Jimmy Kimmel last night. Last night I was on Lawrence O'Donnell, and what he said, and it really made the most sense, was, you know, it's such a simple question. And the fact that they can't answer, you know, usually members of Congress have to bloviate, and I'm as bad at that as probably anyone. But it was a really simple question. It wasn't a gotcha. I was trying to get to talking about businesses in Wisconsin that are being hurt by the tariffs. But when he couldn't even answer the most basic question, it just shows you it doesn't pass the smell test that, you know, we live by back home. And, you know, at the end of the day, Trump's tariffs are taxes on all of us. But man, I lost my 5 minutes just trying to get a simple answer to who pays for tariffs. And, you know, I think at the end, the secretary looked pretty bad for trying to tap dance that desperately.
Yeah, look, if you want to do something, just say you're going to do it. And I mean, give Trump credit. At some point, he finally did say, yes, those Barbie dolls will cost a couple of bucks more.
Yeah.
And, you know, just follow along with that if you can. But the tap dancing, I sense, will continue as we move through this process. And we appreciate the update. Congressman Mark Pocan from the 2nd Congressional District, always great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, same. Thank you, Pat. Take care.
All right. Yep, take care now. And again, tomorrow we'll have State Senator Sarah Kieski on, Melissa Baldoff as well. Coming up in our next hour, we will be talking to Joe Zepecki. I will ask the Medicaid question there as well. We will get an updated forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot and Todd Alba. Allegedly, Greg, we think.
He said he'll be here with clothes.
Oh, okay. In that case, Greg Bach is back in 1 hour for Matt.
Oh.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
.52 right now as we start to wrap things up for our mornings together before I take a little time off, as mentioned before. And what with expanding the show to 3 hours, was it 2 weeks? It was 2 weeks ago yesterday. Feels like six, but we did it, and we appreciate you coming along for the ride. But in doing so, it's juggled a lot of schedules and things. As you know, Greg Bach is still here from 6 to 8, but then he takes the 8 o'clock hour to prepare for Matt and Air on Air that he and Jane co-host coming up next here across the Civic Media Radio Network. And Sam Davison, our old friend, is on the board for the 8 o'clock hour, and we just frankly haven't had time to chat with guests and juggling things around. And basically, I've introduced him before when he was on the old morning show, representing the pride of the greater Ringle Hatley area. Hatley.
That's right.
Hatfield. Yeah. Now, which one was it? Are you from Ringle or Hatley?
I'm from Ringle.
Yeah, Ringle, of course. How could I have mixed that up? And to everybody looking at each other and puzzled looks on their face, just east of Wausau. If you're on 29 and you head east out of Wausau, you see Weston. Yep, but then you see Ringle.
It's big enough.
And then you see Hatley.
It's big enough to have its own highway exit. So
that's
it's still
right.
Important, right?
Yes. And what's at the Ringle highway exit?
Is
that the one with the Arby's with the gas station, or is that a different one?
That's the Weston one. There's there's a car repair place. I like to say that there's like three things in Ringle. There's like the town hall, there's a bar, and there's the post office, and that's about it.
Okay. Yeah, I see the bar now. I zoom in enough, and there's Ringle Backyard Saloon or Brickyard Saloon.
Yeah,
sorry.
You checking it out on Google Maps?
Absolutely. That's my pro move on everything. And again, just down the road is the thriving metropolis of Hatley, where you will find a Dollar General there near at the exit on your way to the BP. Is there a lot of feuds between Ringle and Hatley? I mean, does it ever turn into violence like on Anchorman, or is there, you know? People,
you know,
throwing tridents around?
I haven't lived there for close to 5 years now. Things may have changed since then, but it was sort of a friendly rivalry back when I lived in Ringle.
Where does it, Ringle, Hatley, is that Wausau School District, or does that stretch over to Wittenberg?
Maybe over to Wittenberg. I went to D.C. Everest.
Okay, so
just,
you're in the Wausau area for that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then you work one of the Madison morning shows right now. but you're a man with hopes and dreams. You're going places.
Yeah.
You're not just staying in that booth forever.
Well, not much longer, actually. In just a few weeks, long term, I'm going to become a social studies teacher. And this summer, I'm taking off to work at a scout camp. So that'll be a good time.
Which scout camp?
Camp DeSomis up in Rhinelander.
Up in Rhinelander. Now, that one I don't know. As a Boy Scout way, way, way back when, I know that a couple of the camps, they still operate, and so I would know some of the names if I heard them. That one doesn't ring a bell. What is it that you do at camp with the Boy Scouts up there? Do you have a particular specialty or thing that you like to do?
Kind of wherever they put me each year.
Okay.
This year, I'm going to be leading the Business and Technology Center. So that'll be fun.
Whoa.
Teaching some merit badges. Yeah.
For business and technology.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that they'd have that at a scout camp, but
no, I love that.
There's a couple of things that it's pretty cool there.
So long as they can also, you know, build a fire and things like that. And
sure. Yeah.
From not all my years, I wasn't there that long, but from my time in scouting, the thing I remember most was winter camping. And we were supposed to bring our dads along, and you were theoretically out there in the snow, you were given one match. And so you really had to work on your fire building skills. You had to get the kindling just right. It had to be dry and everything, because you were only going to get one match. Five matches later.
Yeah, I guess not.
And by the way, that's not just me. That's me and dear old dad. And dad was getting, he was getting frustrated. You know, it's like, who builds a fire in the snow anyway? And eventually we got it going. But yeah, if it was a one match situation, I think that sounds like something out of a Jack London novel or something. Yeah, we'd have been dead in the snowbank at that point. But I suppose you're a pro at it.
Maybe. It's been a while. Look, I usually have a lighter in my car, so I don't need to have a single match, but
right. I mean, not to the extent of Eagle Scout Luke Mathers. I mean, let's be clear. And if you did not know, just ask him. He'll tell you that he's an Eagle Scout. But these are great skills that, you know, you need the outdoor skills, but you also need the indoor skills too, the, you know, science and math and technology and everything else that goes along with it. So it's great to hear that is part of it. So why social studies? Why are you deciding to be a social studies teacher?
Well, once upon a time in a former life, I was going to be a math teacher. Then COVID happened and I realized I didn't want to teach geometry for the rest of my life. And I don't know. I actually met Tim Slicker, one of the hosts of Busted Pencils here on Civic Media. And he sort of got me back into it. And social studies was the path that I chose.
That is awesome. Good. I mean, look, we are all about teaching civics and social studies here on the radio and at Up North News. We need an informed citizenry, and it, honest to God, starts in social studies classes. So as important as all the math and science and everything else is, boy, to get to find out that there, you know, there's a new crop of social studies teachers out there just warms my heart. So I thank you very much for doing that, and wish you all the best in doing it. I know I'll be talking to you on the back end of my vacation, but just in case we don't get a chance to talk about that, I'm glad to learn that about you and glad that you're doing it.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Well, no, thank you. And now here's where I thank everybody else for coming along for these past couple of weeks as we expand the show to 3 hours, 5 days a week. We did it for 5 days last week. 4 days this week, no days next week, 3 days the week after. But then I swear, we're doing 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. My thanks to today's guest, State Senator Sarah Kieski, Melissa Baldoff, Sean O'Malley, Michael McElroy from North Carolina, the Cardinal and Pine, Chad Holmes, who will be filling in here starting tomorrow, and then Matt Rothschild next week. And thanks to all of you for being here this morning. I am Pat Kreitlaw. I'm the founding editor of Up North News, the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Take care. I'll see you May 20th.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.